This week's show is sponsored by Whimsies by Wellness.
Obsessive compulsive disorder, known as OCD, is a debilitating disorder that affects people through relentless intrusive thoughts that trigger time-consuming, repetitive behaviours.
It's actually more common than you might think, affecting around 3% of people.
Our question is, can dogs have OCD?
They can certainly display abnormal and repetitive behaviours, like tail chasing, excessive licking and repetitive barking.
But is it actually OCD? And if it is there anything psychologists can learn from dogs? Welcome to the Dog Scholar.
Well, I found a paper that looked at 60 previous studies, and it spanned a 30-year period, so there was a lot of research in this. And they found that both canine repetitive behaviours and human OCD might respond to the same type of medication, like serotonin reuptake blockers. Most research, though, on repetitive behaviours in dogs, they found only focused on the behaviour itself and not the thinking behind it. For example, someone might excessively wash their hands to prevent a thought of something bad from happening. And we know that people with OCD usually understand that those rituals are excessive, but they still feel forced to do them. The study found no signs of intrusive thoughts in dogs who had those same repetitive behaviours.
Obviously, this is just me anecdotal opinion from many, many dogs and years of experience. But a lot of the time, I can see it as a drive-related issue. The dog's arousal towards chasing things, and it becomes, you know, self-rewarding, and then it's happening again and again and again. But I've worked with quite a lot of dogs that have this, and it, to the point where it affects the welfare. They're actually hurting themselves because the space that they live in just doesn't allow them to do what they're doing at such an intense level, shall we say.
The research so far hasn't been able to unpick whatever thought processes the dog is using to do that. So you articulated there a really good example of the dogs finding it self-rewarding for a particular thing, whereas with humans, it's to try to relieve a really difficult, intrusive, uncomfortable, distressing thought. That kind of sense of relief might be equivalent, but it's really difficult for a piece of research to uncover that. And it might just be that the research that has been done on it so far just hasn't really been able, it's not been sophisticated enough to really focus on that bit. It's all been about the repetitive behaviours.
First of all, I would say that if anybody has got what you would consider to be a repetitive behaviour, something that your dog keeps doing, that's particularly if it's out of context, you know, not something like your dog's jumping up at the back door because it wants to go out and it keeps doing it. That's something completely different to a dog that, you know, is constantly licking itself all the time, or constantly licking particular areas of the house, or staring, you know, almost compulsively glued to shadows and lights and things like that. The first thing that I would say, and I'm sure you'll agree, Danny, as well, is that's a veterinary job, first of all, just to rule out anything neurologically, you know, wrong that's going on there. Don't worry about it. It is something that can be addressed in the vast majority, or certainly decreased in the vast majority of instances. So that would be a sort of like take home for the kickoff. But what I also find interesting is with humans, like you say, it is something where we will, because of our ability or our tendency to like to try to work something out or try to find a solution around it. So we will look for a repetitive behavior and we will rationalize that repetitive behavior by way of the fact that if I don't do it, something bad will happen. If I don't step on a member of my family, if I don't step on each crack in this pavement as I walk along, a member of my family will die. It's a sort of like thing that would go through that member's head. Whereas with dogs, we don't know, and we never will know, will we? Because they can't self-report. But there's nothing really to say that they aren't also finding a behaviour to sort of alleviate this conflict or abnormality that they're experiencing in their own heads.
Well, I've got actual, like, hands-on experience of this with one of my own dogs as a kid, Molly, a Staffordshire Bull Terrier we had. She was
Molly Mischief.
Yeah, Molly Mischief. That's the one. I've told you about her before, haven't I? That was a dog I had from a child. And she, I told you that from my experience, I see this coming from two places. It can be the displacement of anxiety or drive related to the dog's aroused and wants to put that arousal into a behaviour. Looking back on that, I didn't have a clue. I was a kid. She was just my best mate. She used to take her everywhere. But looking back on it, I would say that was coming from both places. What she would do is she would catch a shadow or, you know, if the sun hits the glass and a light hits the wall, or if it hits your watch, and she'd fly at it with like she was chasing a ball, and then she'd be obsessed and drool looking for it. But as soon as the penny dropped that it was gone, she'd fly at the telly and profusely lick the speakers of the telly, and that would trigger that. So it was like the anxiety of not being able to perform the behaviour would be put into a different behaviour. Obviously, I went in a dog training mind then. I was a kid and I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But now that I've helped people who've got this kind of thing going on with the dogs, I look back and go, wow, that could have been my first real hands-on experience of behaviour change if I knew what's what.
Do you know, that's amazing, because I also think that it can be really easy to misinterpret what could be a sign of an abnormal repetitive behaviour as a quirk in your dog. And I've seen lots of videos online of dogs chasing laser pen, or people encouraging their dogs to chase a laser pen. And then that actually ends up with the dogs doing other things like chasing shadows consistently, which becomes a repetitive behavior.
Well, funny you say that. A lot of clients I've had that have come in with these sorts of obsessive behaviors have been started with that, where they all think it's funny. And when they come to me, they tell me, and when we start working out, when we come to the point of the, it started with a laser, when I explain, like, well, this is where this is stemmed from, the disappearance of the laser, the dog will just fixate and drool and shake and wait for it. And then over a short period of time, that the dog just goes back to being a normal dog. But then over a couple of months, now that's going on for hours and hours and hours. It's on a ladder that can only be climbed.
Yeah. And that awareness piece, I think, is important. Because if you think about human OCD, I've got a lot of family experience of OCD. It does run in my family. And a lot of the things, the behaviours that become repeated, people don't necessarily recognise that as, oh, that could be a trait of OCD. Have you thought about this? Or should we have a conversation? Should we go and speak to somebody? People go, oh, what are you doing that for? That's a bit weird. And they don't recognise it. And that, when you're experiencing something like that, that can be really hurtful. That's really harmful, because it then makes you feel like there's something wrong with you, rather than recognizing that there's a disorder that you're experiencing and the distress is real. So that awareness piece, I think, is important in humans, and it's also important in dogs. You hear a lot of people describing, if they like to have everything neat and tidy and in order, they say, oh, I've got OCD. That drives me insane.
Yeah.
So I'm like, please don't minimize that experience, because OCD is really debilitating and it's really difficult if you're experiencing it. So please don't equate that to lining your pencils up. Yeah. And I think it's the same with dogs. So if you're seeing your dog repeating a behavior, rather than thinking it's quirky and it's funny and encouraging it to do it again, perhaps just pause, take a step back and wonder whether that could be indicative of something else.
You see, the problem with this is when we as people would have OCD, it's defined by how it is impacting your life. Yeah. Everyone's got traits of things. You know, I can be a bit obsessive, but I haven't got OCD.
Yeah.
If it's negatively impacting your life, you can't hold a job down because you need to turn your lights off 1,000 times, then that's a problem now that you're going to have to work through with, you know, doctors and counsellors and whatever the course of action might be.
Yeah.
With a dog, it's never really a problem to the dog. If you look at a dog that's portraying them sorts of obsessive habits, it's really involved in it. It looks like it's enjoying it up to the point of distress. And you still see elements of, like you would if the dog was chasing a ball.
Yeah.
Where it negatively impacts is the people.
Yeah.
And you know, that is not a taboo thing to say, because our dogs have to conform to our lifestyles within reason. Otherwise we can't coexist.
Absolutely. That study was really focused on repetitive behaviours in dogs. The next one looked at dogs that are diagnosed with something similar to OCD called canine compulsive disorder. And it wanted to see if the brains of dogs with canine compulsive disorder, or CCD for short, had similar differences to those that we see in the brains of people with OCD. This study took brain scans of 16 Dobermans, half of which had CCD. It's actually quite common in Dobermans. Some reports say about 1 in 4 have CCD. This study found that dogs with CCD had larger brains and more grey matter overall compared to dogs that didn't have the disorder. They actually found less grey matter, though, in areas that are important for emotions and decision making. And that might actually make it harder for those dogs to control the compulsive behaviours. They also found that the more severe a dog's symptoms, the more their brain differed from dogs that didn't have CCD. So in conclusion, this study that found Dobermans that did have CCD had brain structure similarities to humans with OCD. And that's really important because it could definitely help us to advance our understanding of OCD in humans and its treatment.
Mm. I'm assuming it's called CCD, canine compulsive disorder, so it's just a canine disorder. Equivalent of the human thing with a different name. In the dog industry, there's a tendency to dismiss drugs as being unnecessary, and you know, and in the human world as well, you know, it can be quite taboo for people to admit that they're on any kind of medication that helps to control mental health issues that they might be struggling with. With dogs, you know, whilst there are certain drugs, you know, clomipramine and selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and XYZ that are able to assist in, if you like, bringing things down a little bit, you know, on a neurotransmitter level, being able to sort of like set the stage so that it's a little bit easier for you to be able to build what you can do, you know, and bring in your training and your ability to be able to say, let me show you something different, you know, let me teach you a different coping mechanism for it, let such and such, to be able to try and interrupt it. So the drug alone won't, you know, alone doesn't do a great deal, you know, with behavior modification, provided the behavior change program is decent, can achieve benefits. Removed too early, you can see a return of the problem, and the same with the behavior modification. If you remove that too early, you can see a return. So it's a real balancing act. So I think it's important that if you have a dog that's displaying these symptoms, you don't panic about it. Two, you don't go it alone, but you actually do work with professionals, you know, who are able to accurately put you on a path where you can see improvements.
I think on the flip side of that as well, I have actually dealt with a lot of dogs with this, and over 10 years, I've had two dogs that I've said that go and speak to your vet and let's see if you can get medication. It always starts with a vet visit. Mm. Anyone who says their dog's, you know, obsessive over things and it's quite alarming, I go and see your vet, rule out anything. And when they come back in, the one thing that they say is that is straight away to medication on that. And I've only had two that have ended up on medication. We've kicked the habit by not letting the dog indulge in the habit, and giving the dog an outlet for that habit in other ways. Two of them, the benchmark, which is where I said, go to your vet, go back, let's get some medication and take the edge off, was I felt like the dog had got itself in such a state that there was no capacity to retain a lesson. Mm. It was, you know, it's like trying to learn algebra in a nightclub. There was just too much going on. Yeah. And I've said it might be worth going back to your vet now and saying, I want to try this medication in cohesion with a training program. And they got really good results from it. But that is only that I'm quite proud of that, to be honest. Like I've anyone whose dogs has random aggression, anxiety, anything, I always say go to the vets first. Yeah. But from the flip side of what Jamie was saying then, I find that we are quite quick to start jumping to medication instead of trying to understand that dogs are quite simple compared to us, and it's a beautiful thing. And a lot of cases are just don't let them do the habit until the habit's a thing of the past. If you know, I don't know, to downplay it a little bit, if you don't bite your nails, you don't feel like biting your nails, and that first 3 or 4 weeks can be difficult because you're trying to bite your nails because it's a habit, but then it can stop.
Well, one of the treatments for OCD is exposure response therapy. Yeah. And the way that that's done in humans is to identify one of the compulsions that they have, mm-hmm. and it might be, for instance, say hand washing. And when that person feels the compulsion to do that, then the idea is to sit with that feeling and don't go and do it straight away. It's a bit like a bell curve. It gets really, really uncomfortable, and then it starts
to
subside.
That's exactly what I see in training. And it's exactly the same advice I give.
Yeah, and you build up to the major triggers then. After time, those peaks don't get so high. And then the person learns that they can cope without doing the compulsion. But equally, there are there's been a lot of success for some people with medication, and sometimes a combination of the two. And so I think for dogs, perhaps the same as people, it's going to be down to the individual.
It, absolutely.
I worked with a spaniel that would compulsively lick the grout lines on a tiled kitchen floor. I'm talking like for 2 hours.
Wow.
This dog would go. It would go. The owner would come downstairs, the dog would, whoa, like a train on a track, you know, like if it was battery powered and it wouldn't stop.
Oh, bless
what him. Happens if you put the dog outside? It does exactly the same on the patio slabs. Mm. Okay, so the dog has been able to sort of like generalize and transfer this compulsive behavior
that
to
must
this
be really
environment.
Painful
right.
For the dog, actually.
So if you were, and the way that I sort of like see it, arousal in the dog, as you were saying then, when the dog is over aroused. So the owner coming downstairs or whatever it happens to be, I'm a happy young spaniel. And most dogs, my arousal comes up like this. And then if you imagine that I'm filling up a flask and there's like a vent here where that flask goes off into an appropriate behaviour. Yeah. So my body would say to me, oh, you've got a bit too much of this. Let's start doing something like this. And it's almost as though you've got a faulty flap on that so that it keeps going up and instead spills over into abnormal and maladaptive, inappropriate behaviours.
It's a really nice analogy.
It's the way
that the dog evolves a coping strategy.
And that's right. Yeah. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling response to that feeling, that over-arousal. And what I was going to say is with the graduated exposure therapy, where I took that spaniel and I thought, the compulsion is coming upon you to lick those grout lines, but I'm going to prevent that. Yeah. I'm going to allow you to feel it, allow you to deal with it, but you're on a lead and a collar or a harness, and I'm going to hold you back and let you experience that without being able to fulfill that, compulsion to do that.
It's understanding, isn't it? It's understanding that just putting your dog through that little bit of acute stress will resolve the chronic stress that your dog is currently going through, which is scientifically proven to lessen the dog's life.
This week's show is sponsored by Whimsies by Wellness. A good dental chew should be a win-win. Your dog gets a treat they can take off to a corner and chew on, and you get a significant improvement in their breath and all-round oral health. The Whimsies, Alligator and Toothbrush chews have been designed with unique shapes to help clean the smaller spaces between dog's teeth and ensure proper blood flow through the gums, all while your dog chews. Look out for Whimsies at pet stores or order online by clicking the link in the description. Are there specific genes that make dogs more likely to have CCD? Well, one study looked at this and scientists took the DNA, the genetic code, of 87 Dobermans who have CCD and 63 who don't. And they actually found 119 gene variants or differences that were more common in dogs who had canine compulsive disorder. There were four variants in particular that stood out, which seemed to affect the way that brain cells communicated with each other. One of them acts like glue for brain cells and it helps them to connect. Think of it as Velcro that keeps part of a toy together. Another one aided cell bonding and communication, and that one acts like a translator between cells, making sure everybody in the meeting understands each other. The third one involved movement and coordination. So if it's faulty, it's a bit like a choreographer messing up a dance, leading to shaky movements. And the last one was believed to help break down molecules, akin to a recycling plant processing waste. Each gene is crucial for brain cell interaction and teamwork, and malfunctions in those genes might be contributing to CCD in dogs and similar conditions in humans.
So if we're saying that like there's a genetic component there, could we breed that out then, in theory, couldn't we?
I'm not a geneticist, don't think genes work like that. No. I don't think it's okay. From my below base understanding, it's a sort of like piggyback affair, really, where you change one thing and various other things change with it without necessarily thinking, I don't like that that's responsible for that. So if I take that away, that will be that sorted.
Yeah, I don't really mean it that simple, like we're going to swap ketchup for brown sauce.
It's going to be a bit more complex than that.
I mean, what is clear is that there seems to be a genetic component to this. I mean, I'm not a geneticist, so I wouldn't want to speak with great confidence on it.
I was just going to say there was a, I remember a study done by, you'll have heard of this, Baliev with Silver Fox experiment, whereby they wanted to, basically they were collecting pelts from foxes, I believe it was Russia, and they paid for an experiment whereby genetically they bred the tamest with the tamest with the tamest with the tamest down the lines to be able to produce these animals that were easy to handle, which made it less difficult to be able to perform your role, which bizarrely was taking their pelts, I believe. But along with that, other things started to happen. Yeah. Tails started to curl. You know, coats began to develop instead of plain coats. So it's not like, you say, ketchup.
Do you know what that made me
sauce.
Think of? In like the late 90s when people used to want to like clock their mileage in the car, so they wired that fuse in with your brake lights. So they wired the fuse in with the brake lights, so you couldn't do it because now the brake lights go out as well and you'll get pulled up. Do you know what I mean? My mind just went there. But that's interesting. Genetics work in a weird and wonderful way, though, don't they?
They do. But one thing you could look at is genetic screening as part of dog health assessments, particularly if it's a breed that's particularly susceptible, like Dobermans, and that might help vets and owners to spot the potential for it early on.
If we can
so If you know that your dog has genes that make it susceptible to it, you might be more aware of keeping an eye open for those kind of behaviours and then being able to treat them really quickly.
As we would do with hip dysplasia or eye conditions or whatever else in responsible breeding. Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right. What about the listener questions, Jamie?
Okay. Question one comes from Georgia in Ogle Close in Merseyside. Or is that Ogle Close? It might be Ogle Close, Georgia, or Ogle. Either one of them fits my bill. Can dogs get depression like people?
This question I thought was a really fascinating one. And of course, we know in humans that depression is a clinical condition and it can be characterised by someone having really low mood and the things that you might traditionally enjoy, you stop enjoying and it affects your daily life. You just don't take the same pleasure in stuff. And it can be incredibly debilitating. And with dogs, the consensus is actually we just don't know. There can be times when dogs appear to be very withdrawn and less active than they'd usually be, and their eating patterns might change. But of course, it could also be a medical issue. So if your dog does display any of those kind of behaviours, the first port of call should always, always, always be the vet's. What I do know from a little bit of research is that in some of the cases, there doesn't seem to be any other explanation other than the dog experiencing some kind of depression. But because dogs can't speak to us, we just don't know the cause. There has been some success with using similar kind of drugs that humans use to treat depression with dogs that are displaying those kind of behaviours. But the truth is, we don't know if they get depression like people, but they certainly can have low mood that's characterised in a similar way.
I think it's perfectly reasonable to say any mammal can have low mood. I just think depression's quite complex, isn't it? There's lots of things going through your mind when you're depressed. I've seen aspects in my dog's life where I think they're a bit low, but they shrug it off and move on. I think we've covered in other episodes, dogs are exceptionally resilient. What we need to be careful of is us pushing how we feel about certain things and our knowledge on certain topics onto our dogs, because then we can start seeing things that aren't there or making mountains out of molehills in relation to our dogs.
So recognising that there might be a characteristic that your dog has or a behaviour that they're displaying that shows something might be wrong, so investigating that, but not necessarily... reading more complexity into it than they might.
I've never seen my dog appear in low mood without there being a reason for it. And if it happens, I'll give you the day. I'll go the next day. Right, we're gonna have a pop the vet. Ear infection. Yeah. Something's going on. Anal glands need doing. There's always something. What do you think, Jane?
When I was a kid, there was a book called, it's probably still there, I think they made it into a cartoony sort of thing, but it was Fungus the Bogeyman. You ever heard of Fungus the Bogeyman? Okay, so it was basically like some troll that lived with his family underground, and it was surrounded by snot and stuff like that. And he used to have a sign that hung in, it's probably conditioned me, because I love it. But he used to have a sign that hung in his cave that said, nothing is permanent but woe.
As if to say, that is you, that. Right. That's your ethos.
So, taking Fungus's philosophy, okay, the wisdom of Fungus. Yeah. I think Raymond Briggs wrote Fungus the Bogeyman. Anyway, excellent book, Raymond. The way that I explain it to people is with dogs or with animals, mammals, living organisms, if it comes down to, can I predict it and can I control it when it's an event in my life? So do I know when and if it's going to happen? And if it happens, can I do anything about it to make it happen more or to make it not happen at all or to get rid of it if it's something that I don't like? If I can control it, so it's something that, okay, if it happens, I can deal with it, but my God, I never know when it's going to happen or why it's going to happen, then that will create an anxious dog or runs the risk of creating an anxious dog. If I can predict it, so I know when it's going to happen, but I can't control it, so there's nothing I can do about it if it does, then that's going to make me a fearful and a nervous animal because, yes, I know when it's going to happen, but there's nothing I can do, so I want to avoid it. If I cannot predict it and I cannot control it, that lends itself to depression in a dog because nothing is permanent but woe. And you'll hear the term learned helplessness from, Martin Seligman's work and stuff like that, where stuff comes in where people say, I give up on everything. There's no point in trying anything because nothing I ever do can work in this situation or any situation. However, the light at the end of the tunnel is if you can predict it and you can control it, then you get yourself a successful animal, a successful dog that is able to go on and think, throw what you like at me. I know what's coming. I know exactly how to deal with it when it arrives. Let me go and enjoy my life.
That was a beautiful explanation, though.
And that's how you turn a fungus into a fungus.
Fungus philosophy.
Well done. Next question.
Okay, question two.
Doesn't work to our American viewers, though, doesn't it? They go fungi. Oh, yeah,
a fungi. Yeah, he's a fungi.
He's a fungi. He is now because he can predict it.
I used to think he was miserable, but he's a fungi.
Yeah.
Okay, question two, Amy, from Piddle River in Dorset. I suffer from OCD and I get anxious a lot. I've read that having a dog can help, but I'm worried that my anxieties might affect the dog. Is there any way that I can make it work?
I love this question because it's something that I have, you'll be surprised to know I have views on. There's kind of two elements to that you see within the dog world on social media. You have the side of people that struggle with all sorts of anxieties, maybe OCD, you know, whatever it might be, and they get a dog to kind of, you know, push their emotions and how they feel into it. And as a dog trainer, I see a lot of fallout from the dog because the dog's still a living, breathing, sentient being. You know, they're not genetically mapped to just take our heavy load. Do you know what I mean? And then there's the other side of it where they really, really help because having that dog means that your mind is in a structured routine of, right, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do this session and then I'm going to go out in the fresh air, which is known to make anyone feel better anyway when you're out in the elements and away from, you know, the troubles of the world that be.
People.
People. And you put all that stress of the situation and whatever you're feeling into something productive. And again, you know, if you're depriving your mind of going down those paths, then it gets less and less over time. Yeah. And you know, with a lot of things, I think that's a really good healthy coping strategy, and both person and dog can coexist and really help each other in that way. You just have to be quite disciplined and make sure that it, you know, to put it in bluntly, the dog's not there as a teddy bear to woe over when you're feeling bad and things like that.
I love the fact that Amy's even considering this to begin. You know, she's recognising that she has tendencies to feel anxious, and she's considering, before she's gone out and got a dog, she's thinking about, right, this is something I recognise in myself. I know it can have an impact on the dog. What can I do to make sure that it doesn't? So, Amy, fair play to you for thinking that way. That is really, really self-aware. And one of the things I would say, just from a research perspective, is we know there's research that shows that humans interacting with a dog can reduce your cortisol, it can reduce your stress levels, you get release of oxytocin between both human and dog. So there's no doubt that symbiosis between you and the dog can have a really positive effect on you as a human and even your physiology.
My thoughts on that, Amy, are basically, if you look back onto, you know, to what was said just earlier on in the show about the ability to predict and control, I think there's a mutual benefit for you there. If you're able to set yourself a routine with your dog, even if you're not formally training them, but you have an actual structure of what you do, which you both know what's coming and you both get to enjoy, you both get to be able to control, then I think it can, you know, potentially have a far more beneficial impact on your relationship as an individual with, you know, with life, and obviously between you and your dog, than it will a negative one.
Just quickly to finish that, whenever we get any animal or we take a pet on, we have to think not just will this benefit me, but will this benefit the pet as well? There has to be coexistence. There has to be a balance to everything, doesn't there?
Brilliant questions, though. Thank you so much,
Danny. Final thoughts on this one, mate.
I think it's important to just think outside your own bubble. You know, what's entertaining to you might be really bad for your dog. So don't let your entertainment be the demise of your dog, is what I'm trying to say, really.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. See you next week.